Good mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a serious conversation with Superintendent Andy Hatton about the impact that $6 million in budget cuts will have on Findlay City Schools students. Also this morning, an overwhelming majority of Americans believe we are deeply divided, not just along political lines, but on our values. In honor of the upcoming Martin Luther King Day holiday and the National Day of Racial Healing that follows, how do we bridge that divide and begin to heal? And we have another collection of yummy and easy recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Yes, a day early. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, January 16th, 2025. So yesterday's numbers, I thought this was kind of interesting in the consumer price index that was out yesterday. I don't know if you caught this because there's a lot of data that goes into the CPI, and the news reports always focus on kind of the top line data. Overall, consumer prices were up 2.9% in December compared to a year ago. This is a Bureau of Labor Statistics figures, and the Fed pays attention to this when they decide whether or not they should raise or lower interest rates. And so that's the context that everybody is paying attention to the CPI. But when you dig into the numbers, there was some interesting stuff that you might not have heard. For example, some good news, even though consumer prices overall were up, the latest CPI report shows a few things are cheaper. Among them, ice cream and alcohol. So if you want to ease your pain about higher prices on everything else, at least alcohol and ice cream are cheaper. So oh, that was worth pointing out. Really wanted to make sure that you knew that. Ice cream and alcohol. If you don't want to worry about rising prices because you're making enough money that it doesn't, you know, make a difference one way or the other, what are the best jobs in America? According to U.S. News and World Report, they are out with their latest list of the best jobs in America. Number one on their list, nurse practitioners, which, of course, are nurses that have undergone clinical training beyond registered nurses, not quite to the level of doctors, so they're kind of in between nurse practitioners. U.S. News and World Report ranked the profession number one on its list of the best jobs in America 2025, and that's based on the job market, employment outlook, opportunities for advancement, and of course, pay. Nurse practitioners typically make more than six figures with a median salary of more than $126,000 in 2023. That is the latest data available. $126,000 for NPs. Let's see here. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics predicts a 46% increase in the number of nurse practitioners that will be needed by 2033. So within the next decade. So it is a job with a lot of growth potential. IT manager comes in at number two on the list, followed by physician assistant, financial manager, and software developer. So the best jobs in America. I tell you what, if you're making that kind of money, you are doing pretty well in East Cleveland. This, I thought, was kind of interesting. Data from the Census Bureau reveals that the Cleveland suburb of East Cleveland has the lowest median family income in the U.S. among places with a population of 5,000 people or more. The lowest median income in the U.S. at $37,500 median income in East Cleveland, $37,500. That is the lowest in the country, ahead of Crowley, Louisiana, and Parker, South Carolina, second and third on the list. For comparison, the median household income for the United States as a whole is $80,610. So, wow. That's not good to have the lowest median income. But there you go. East Cleveland taking that distinction as the lowest in the country. So big news this morning. You might have heard about this. The FDA has announced that they are banning red dye number three. Red three. You see it in a number of products that are available on store shelves, but no more. After more than 30 years, after scientists found links between red three and cancer in lab animals, testing found a link between the dye and cancer. The dye is made from petroleum, which is kind of interesting. I didn't know that. But red dye number three is added to foods and beverages to give them an appealing cherry color. It is commonly used in candy, cakes, cookies, icings, even some medicines like cough syrup and cough drops, that kind of thing. Manufacturers that use the additive are being given 2 years to remove it and reformulate their products. Red dye number three is already banned in California and many other countries, but now it will be banned in the U.S. as well. Red dye number three going on. Interesting. And speaking of health news, this I thought was kind of interesting. Experts are coming up with a new way to define obesity in this country. The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology Commission wrote in a new paper that body mass index, or BMI for short, is not the most accurate way to measure health at an individual level. That's kind of how we determine whether someone is classified as obese, is by their BMI. But they say that's not the best way of doing that. They recommend including body fat measurements and existing health issues and taking all of that into account instead of just relying on body mass index alone. They also are recommending that we use the terms preclinical obesity and clinical obesity, kind of like pre-diabetes and diabetes, to distinguish between people who have potential health risks and from obesity and those who are actually experiencing health risks from obesity. So, and it's kind of interesting, the CDC says about 40% of American adults are considered obese. I wonder if this new definition will mean the numbers will go up or down. So, but it's not about fudging the numbers at all. It's about coming up with a more accurate definition. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know on this Thursday morning. Nearly all Americans use products that involve artificial intelligence, although they don't always realize that's the case. A new survey, a Gallup Telescope survey, found that an estimated 99% of Americans have used at least one AI-enabled product in the past week. But two-thirds, roughly, didn't realize that they were interacting with AI at the time. Wow. That's interesting and maybe a little bit disturbing on some level, isn't it? The survey also found that despite the widespread use, people's views on artificial intelligence are rather bleak. A majority expect that AI will have a negative impact on Americans' job opportunities, U.S. national security, and the spread of false information. And yet, whether we realize it or not, darn near everyone is interacting in some way with AI. Something to think about there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Snow showers today with a high around 30. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low around 20. The Ohio Department of Transportation is having a record year and not in a good way.
MoDOT has now confirmed 28 snowplows have been hit so far this season. That's twice as many compared to last winter and a new record for ODOT. Previous record was 22. Two plows were hit by drunk drivers. The agency is reminding drivers to give plows plenty of room.
If you hit one, you're going to lose and your car is going to get pretty messed up. These are big trucks. They're carrying 10 tons of salt. They have a 12-foot steel blade in front of their truck.
ODOT reminds drivers to keep a safe distance. Don't tailgate a plow to get extra traction from the salt.
Onan's Dave Chudowski talking with ODOT's Brent Kovacs. Get more in this story on our website. The Corey Rawson Local School District says it has received a bond rating upgrade from Moody's Investors Service to AA3, which is considered high quality according to Moody's methodology. The school district explains, like a personal credit report, the district carries a bond rating from a bond rating agency to signify the district's financial management and demographic strength to investors and potential investors who buy the district's bonds. The higher the bond rating, the lower the cost of financing. For comparison purposes, this ranks Corey Rawson Local Schools in the top 25% of all currently rated Ohio public schools. In addition to the rating upgrade, the district also announced that the Corey Rawson Board of Education and Administration refinanced the Series 2014 bonds from the elementary school construction project, resulting in total interest savings of more than $200,000. Get more in this story on our website. Hancock Public Health is conducting a digital equality survey. The health department says your input in the survey will help them identify gaps and create programs that ensure everyone has equal access to digital resources. The health department says together we can work towards a more connected and equitable community. We have a link to that survey in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, earlier this week, the Findlay City School Board announced the final decision on $6 million in budget cuts for the Findlay City School District. And Superintendent Andy Hatton is back with us once again to talk more about those cuts, the difficult decisions that had to be made, and the impact they will have on students in the district. And Mr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it. The president of the school board said that this described this as a heartbreaking moment for our district and community. That was a quote in the statement by board president Matt Cooper. I would have to believe that you would echo those sentiments.
Good morning, Chris. As always, thank you very much for having me this morning. It is heartbreaking. I echo President Cooper's comments. I think we all do. This is not a position that we want to be in. We know that this decision weighs heavily on everybody, especially our students, definitely our staff and our families. And these cuts are a last resort, but this is where we are.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the decision-making process. As we were talking a couple of weeks ago, there was a lengthy list of possible cuts that you kind of whittled down to the ones that were decided upon. How did you decide which were the ones that would ultimately be implemented over some of the others that you decided not to implement?
Right. Well, all of these, as we weighed this out, one of the things I shared with the board and that I shared with our team is that there were no pros and cons. As we went through these lists, they're all cons. Mm-hmm. These are all, you know, value propositions that we have to weigh when we make these very difficult decisions. And so the one thing that was not as difficult was the number. The math is very simple, and it's $6 million that must take place in terms of our reductions for the 25-26 school year. And what we did was our best to balance the impact directly to the classroom, amongst our administrative team, across our support staff, and also those extracurricular opportunities that Trojan Country is so proud of that we offer our students. So we did our best to balance that impact across all of our operations.
So with respect to that, one of the first things that jumped out to me and to a lot of others in the reaction to this announcement was the six administrative positions that were that will be eliminated, as opposed to 23 support staff positions and 43 teaching positions. There were some who feel that maybe that was a bit disproportional, that perhaps the administration should have taken a larger hit, if you will.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because actually, Findlay City Schools, when you look at our comparable districts, we were already below the average number of administrators per student in our 20 most comparable districts. Mm-hmm. And actually, not backfilling those and eliminating those six administrator positions is actually a 15% reduction on the current administrative staff, which is a greater percentage than any of those other positions. So it's actually an extremely significant hit to our administrative staff.
As we mentioned, and again from the statement from Board President Matt Cooper, there's no sugarcoating it. These cuts will be deeply felt by our students, staff, and families. The fact that students will in fact feel the impact of these cuts, particularly when it comes to teachers and supplemental positions. Obviously, the pay to participate for extracurriculars will impact students. But talk a little bit about the broad impact that students will experience educationally as a result of this. What are they not going to be getting that they were getting before?
Well, and as I said, this is very difficult to talk about, because I know that our community loves Findlay City Schools. We have a long history of pride here in Trojan Country, and we all want to take care of all of our students. You know, we're a very large district. We're over 5,000 students, and I think right out of the gate, one of the things that hits the hardest is those amazing bus drivers that we have, that are some of the, you know, the first staff members and the last staff members that our students interact with on a daily basis. And we have an excellent transportation department. And that's going to be the first one that I'm very worried about, that I think that our community is worried about, that's going to impact students, because it's to and from school. And then it's, will we have the capacity to cover our extracurricular events? And then, you know, slightly larger, you know, larger class sizes, especially at our elementary. At our elementary schools is going to be felt. That's an extra, you know, reading group, an extra math group. And, you know, it's just, it spreads out that teacher's attention in a time when we are really honed in on focusing on early literacy and continuing to elevate every aspect of academics here. You know, this is a pivotal moment, as you kind of teed up there. This is a pivotal moment for our schools, and we're at a crossroads here in our community. It's not just about our schools. This is about our community. And what type of community and school district do we want to have here moving forward?
Just to be clear, with respect to, especially once you get into the middle school and especially the high school level, are there specific courses, programs, electives, and such that will be eliminated because of these cuts? I mean, are there specific ones? Have those been decided, or does that remain to be seen?
Well, right now, and I appreciate you asking that question, right now what's happening, and I've been very transparent with our staff. I sent them a video message before the board meeting on Monday, and then I stayed after to film another one to let them know that myself and our team, we've engaged in a timeline of conversations. We want to be very thoughtful and empathetic about these difficult moments that we're in, because large groups, small groups, and individuals all need to be have the opportunity to have a conversation with myself or people on the team. And so for right now, those decisions are still being made in terms of the specifics. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I also want to have the opportunity to talk to my people internally and our staff internally and show them that respect before they hear something on the news.
So, in other words, we got the number of 43 teaching positions, but exactly which positions those will be and what programs they will impact have yet to be determined.
Correct. And the other thing that's very challenging with that in the HR world is attrition. You know, we have people retiring, we have people that are taking opportunities elsewhere or relocating. So a lot of moving parts between now and May.
Okay. And in conjunction with the cuts that were announced, the decision was made to once again go back to the voters later on in the year and ask once again for this same 1% income tax measure. Why the same ask? I mean, was there a conversation about maybe whittling it down to, say, for example, 0.75% or something that might be a little bit more palatable to voters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, as President Cooper said at the board meeting, we don't want to be in this position asking for more money from our voters. We don't want to be in a position to ask for a raise in taxes. That's the system we have here in Ohio. It's very critical that we diversify our revenue streams because of the over-reliance on property tax. And so the other piece about that, you know, that reduction, certainly we those things were considered in terms of a lesser ask. However, I would remind everyone that smaller asks were asked in 2020 three times, and all three of those failed. And at this point, you know, with 20 years without new operational funding and all of our management costs and operational costs going up. Mm-hmm. And because of the failure in November, we are now even another calendar year behind on any potential collection. So it's actually not the same ask. It is the same number in terms of 1%, but now we are further behind. And the ask is different because we are making $6 million in cuts for 25-26. And then if we are successful in May, those cuts must stay in place. But if we're successful in May, in 2026, we might be able to start bringing some things back, more opportunities back, some teaching positions back, but we are in a position where we know some cuts are going to need to remain permanent. So we have listened to our community.
We will leave it there for now. The picture coming more into focus, but still more details have yet to be hammered out, and we will continue to follow it. Again, Findlay City Schools Superintendent Andy Hatton with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time, providing the update. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you.
According to a Gallup poll conducted right before the election, 80% of U.S. adults believe that our country is greatly divided on the most important values. And a recent Pew Research study noted that two-thirds of Americans feel exhausted when they are thinking about political division in America today. So where do we go from here? The president and CEO of the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, Lejeune Montgomery Tabrone, is author of a new book called How We Heal. And I thought it was interesting, Lejeune, and rather telling that 80% of Americans believe we are greatly divided on our values, not the issues. On our values, what does that say to you?
I think they don't really know if we are divided on our values because we haven't had the conversation.
No.
We haven't had the healing conversations to connect with one another and to affirm one another and also to begin to have shared understanding with one another. I believe there is an empathy gap that is showing up by these divisive positions. Healing is the pathway by which we can connect with one another and begin to build trusting relationships across our differences.
Yeah.
But allow us to work together through those differences to create places for everyone to be affirmed and valued.
Was that part of the reason for this book at this time? I mean, I'm guessing you didn't just start writing it back in September when this poll was taken, or maybe you did, but was this kind of exactly what you're aiming at?
Exactly. We know that many people want to have these conversations, and they don't know how. So this book was written to show people the power of healing and to introduce the practice and provide the tools that people can utilize to connect across our humanity, to begin to have conversations that are not about blaming or shaming one another, but affirming one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the methodology works.
So this is out now in conjunction with the National Day of Racial Healing, which is always the day after the Martin Luther King holiday. Explain more about what the National Day of Racial Healing is and what's happening to observe the occasion, what the kind of the mission is.
The day is intended to motivate people and inspire people to act, to actually conduct healing circles and healing conversations within their family, within their community, in their organization. We will have activations throughout the nation, as well as events on different television programs, on Telemundo and the Jennifer Hudson Show. The purpose is to encourage people not only to engage in conversation during the national day, but from that point forward,
yeah,
to understand that through healing, we can create positive change in our community.
And by the way, I thought this was interesting, too. You also have a children's book called Our Differences Make Us Stronger. Obviously, the same message here. I mean, a little bit obviously presented for kids, but the same overarching message. And talk about the importance of instilling that message in the next generation.
Absolutely. In fact, I wrote the story because it's a story that I wish I had heard in my younger ages.
Yeah.
It children, I think, will resonate with the story, but they also will be introduced to tools to begin to have conversations across differences and to understand those differences in a way that will carry through the rest of their life. And they will become the leaders that know how to work across differences and to create the space where the conversations can happen.
So much easier to reach young people before those preconceived notions even take root, as opposed to in the older generations where they have more of a mindset in one particular direction.
Yes, but we know adults need healing as well.
Yeah.
And while people are threatened maybe by the conversation or may feel vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
what we know is this methodology is affirming. It actually leaves people feeling whole and human and able to express a level of empathy across difference.
So talk a little bit about some of that methodology. How do we overcome this division that we were talking about, or this perceived division, when so many of us do struggle to communicate with one another on that human level and find the common ground that we know inherently exists?
Exactly. And as I said, this is not about blaming or shaming one another. But it starts out with just asking someone to share their story. What validates them as a human being? And that through the conversation of sharing stories, you begin to find those commonalities before you get to that point of debating, you know, a belief one way or the other. So, you know, this is a methodology that's steeped in indigenous practices of building the safe space for people to get to know one another as a human being before we engage in, you know, the conversation where we may have a difference. But we get there. And through this process, when we get there, we can hear one another. We create shared understanding. And we can begin to envision a future where we all can feel whole within it. And that is the work of healing.
Does an example come to mind where you have seen this type of racial healing in action, where it has actually worked and made a difference?
I like to share the work that we supported in Flint, Michigan. If you can go back to the water crisis,
mm-hmm.
and probably resonate with the lack of trust and the fragmented communities that were left and dealing with that crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We brought in our Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation methodology and supported the community in conducting these healing circles and beginning to connect the leadership through healing. And through that practice, they were able to begin to create systems for every family in Flint to access water, to have what they needed, to be resilient and survive that ordeal. And the most important thing about the work is it endured. So when the pandemic hit Flint soon thereafter, they were prepared.
Yeah.
They used what they had learned through this healing practice to begin to act to make sure that everyone was taken care of during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And had access to health care, et cetera.
Yeah.
So this work, once we understand the practice, it's enduring. It's a different way to connect with one another.
Yeah.
And
once it
turns out to be not as controversial as we think.
Once you take that first step, this next step becomes that much easier. Again, Lejeune Montgomery Tabron is the president and CEO of the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and author of the new book called How We Heal. Where do we get more information and lay our hands on the book?
Go to dayofracialhealing.org. You will find ways to access and purchase the book. Also, conversation guides, information about the activations going on the National Day all across the nation.
Lejeune, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, yesterday, you remember, we had just a tremendous collection of broken news, some absolutely fabulous stories, but you can't hit a home run every time at bat, so kind of a light day, actually, today. it's just the way it works out. There are a handful of items, though, here. This is kind of weird. The World Monuments Fund, which, first of all, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as the World Monuments Fund, but apparently there is, and this organization has now listed the moon as an at-risk site. The moon is an at-risk site, according to the World Monuments Fund. More specifically, they are concerned that space tourism threatens to destroy Neil Armstrong's boot print, the very first footstep on the moon. They say, you get tourists in there, they're tromping all over the moon, and they may actually destroy Neil Armstrong's first boot print. Exploitative visitation, souveniring, and looting by future missions and private lunar exploration could eventually compromise this truly unique cultural heritage, according to the statement from the WMF. There are other new threatened monuments or historic places that are on the list, but the moon is the most noteworthy. I guess I can see that. I mean, if we're going to go and, you know, colonize the moon or at least vacation on the moon, do this space tourism thing, I could see where that would actually be a problem. But it just sounds kind of weird. The moon is an at-risk site for its cultural heritage. Okay. Kind of a weird story out of Michigan. Clinton Township police say a man in Mount Clemens, Michigan, used his... This isn't funny, but you kind of... he used his two-year-old son as a shield during a standoff with police over the weekend. Wow. Dalvin Brooks is now facing charges of assault with a dangerous weapon, federal felony firearm possession, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, domestic violence, and child abuse. Police say he assaulted and pointed a gun at the mother of his child on Sunday And when police arrived on the scene, he held the child in front of himself before surrendering and being taken into custody. Fortunately, no one injured, but I'm guessing we mentioned the laundry list of charges. He is certainly not up for Father of the Year. Not going to be Father of the Year there. Don't think he has, he's at any risk of being charged with that. I know that whenever there is a close encounter or an accident of any kind involving an aircraft, the FAA gets involved and the National Transportation Security Bureau, the NTSB, and all of that. But this one seems like it should be a fairly simple and straightforward investigation. A coyote is being blamed for forcing a flight to return to O'Hare International Airport in Chicago on Sunday morning. Officials say a United Airlines flight from Chicago to Phoenix had to return to O'Hare after its landing gear hit a coyote during takeoff. Nobody on the plane was hurt. I'm assuming that the coyote didn't fare so well. They took all of the passengers off the plane involved and put them on another aircraft, and the passengers were able to get to their destination later that afternoon. It says the FAA is investigating, but I would assume that that's pretty straightforward investigation. I mean, it shouldn't take too long to wrap that one up. You got a coyote on the runway. Wow. And it's not like you can swerve like you would, you know, if there was a dog in the road or a squirrel in the road or something. Is planes can't do that. That's on takeoff. You don't want them to do that. It seems like that would be a fairly straightforward investigation there. Might want to patch that hole in the fence. Here is a helpful piece of life advice. If you have a nose ring, don't try to stick your proboscis through the holes of a mesh chair. According to a news report from the Daily Mail out of London, a woman did not follow that advice and ended up getting her nose ring stuck in the mesh backing of the chair. After her fellow employees at the office where she works could not free her from this predicament, they ended up calling the fire department, who had to wheel her out of the office as she faced backward while still attached to the chair, and they loaded her into a vehicle to take her to the fire station, because apparently they didn't have the tools with them. It's not something the firefighters normally carry, tools to free someone's nose ring from an office chair. So they took her back to the local station. She was eventually liberated when one of the officers, one of the firefighters, was able to cut her loose with a pair of pliers after about 10 minutes. That sounds like that would be really, really painful. Eventually, everyone had a good laugh about it, and the woman posed for a photo with her heroes. She said she was just happy they didn't have to use a chainsaw. You know. If you have a nose ring, don't try. Why would you even do that? Was that like a dare of somebody at work? You know, just, I dare you to put your nose through the mesh of the chair there. Nose ring caught. That's crazy. The people, I think someone has too much free time at work. That's the... And finally, in the broken news this morning, today's viral story online, Brian Johnson. I don't know if you know that name. He is a millionaire who has gone viral for his attempts to reverse aging. He wants to live forever and maintain his youthful good looks. And he has tried just about everything to reverse the aging process of his body. But he recently stopped a treatment because he feared it was actually making him older. He Currently takes 54 supplements daily, Mr. Johnson does, and had recently tried the immunosuppressant rapamycin, which is suspected to have anti-aging benefits. So, anti-aging benefits, he said, I'm all about that. However, as it turns out, the drug not only appeared to age him, but Mr. Johnson also suffered a number of other side effects like skin infections and high glucose levels. So on a statement on social media, he says, despite the immense potential from preclinical trials, my team and I came to the conclusion that the benefits of lifelong dosing of rapamycin do not justify the hefty side effects. So even someone who is willing to do anything and everything to slow down or even reverse the aging process, he's decided to opt out of this one here. My goodness, it's almost like your body was not meant to live forever. It's almost like we were not, as human beings, meant to live forever. Who knew? Crazy. I guess when you're a millionaire, you got money to burn. You can do those kind of crazy things. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Ever wonder what being a Findlay Rotarian is all about?
I'm Alyssa Preston, director of the Hancock County Convention and Visitors Bureau. I am proud to be a Findlay Rotarian because locally we make an impact by recognizing amazing educators in the Findlay and Hancock County area through the Golden Apple Award.
To become part of an organization that brings together business, professional leaders to provide community service and advance goodwill, contact Findlay Rotary at findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Of course, Ohio State and Notre Dame will clash for college football's national championship on Monday evening. And according to a new survey of 2,000 American sports fans, 54% say the right food will make or break the game day experience. One in four in the survey actually care more about the food than the game, which is hard to believe with the Buckeyes in the game, but there you have it. The top five must-haves for your game day smorgasbord: hot wings, barbecue, seven-layer dip, pizza, and chicken tenders. Snacks also ranked high on the list of necessary foods, of course. Nachos, cookies, and potato chips being the top three. Also, and I thought this was kind of interesting, they say you could switch it up. Two of the more popular spicy alternatives, 29% of those in the survey said jalapeno poppers would be good, and 24% would opt for chili. Now, unfortunately, this same poll of those 2,000 American sports fans also found that these foods are associated with heartburn, indigestion, and upset stomach. Although, we apparently don't much care. 44% in the survey said that even knowing the potential digestive effects of these foods, they would still indulge. Because, you know, hey, it's the big game. You got to. And the survey goes on to say that, for that matter, the game itself could also have an impact. The survey, which was commissioned by Tums, by the way, the survey found that one in seven fans say they get heartburn not just from the food, but from their team's poor performance sometimes. So there is that. Well, of course, it is traditional to wrap up the week with my wife, Kyra, and another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This week, a day early,
yes,
because it's a shortened week, taking,
yes,
a little extra R&R,
yes,
this weekend. We'll be out after today until Wednesday of next week. And so we
long
didn't want the
weekend.
Yeah, long weekend. We did not want to let the week go by, though, without sharing some recipes from Kyra's Kitchen, especially given the fact that the big game is coming,
yes,
up on Monday.
Monday.
So,
Go Bucks.
Yeah, these would be great recipes for your
it's gonna be cold
championship party. It's gonna be really cold.
Yeah. Warmy. Yeah.
And we've got a dessert that is especially perfect. But we'll get to that in a moment. We'll start with the baked Mexican chili pasta.
Yes. This will feed a crowd. So 1 pound ground beef, 1 onion chop, 2 cans of 15.5 ounce cans of chili beans, 1 tablespoon of taco seasoning, 1 can 10 ounce of diced tomato and green chilies, 1/2 pound of albo macaroni.
Easy for you to say. I know. It's early in the morning.
Yes. 4 cups shredded Mexican cheese blended and divided. So preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Coat a 9x13 baking dish with nonstick cooking spray in a large bowl. Brown the ground beef with onion over medium heat. Drain if necessary. Add the beans, the taco seasoning, the diced tomatoes. Cover and cook for about 10 minutes, stirring occasionally. Meanwhile, cook your macaroni according to the package directions, drained. In a large bowl, combine the chili, the macaroni, and 3 cups of cheese. Mix well and spoon into your baking dish. Top with your remaining 1 cup cheese, then bake for 12 to 15 minutes or until heated through and the cheese is melted. Boy,
that
and
is good.
Enjoy.
Yeah, that is really easy to do, but really, really yummy. And as you said, it will feed a crowd.
It will feed a crowd.
The baked Mexican chili pasta. Along with that, we have Mexican cornbread muffins.
Yes. So 2 package of your Jiffy corn mix, 2 eggs, 2/3 cup of buttermilk, 1 can of chopped green chilies, drained, 1 cup of shredded cheese, and 4 to 5 dashes pepper sauce, and that's optional. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. So preheat your oven to 425 degrees. Mix all your ingredients together. Pour into your greased muffin tins. Cook 10 to 13 minutes or until golden brown. Let it cool for a few minutes and
you're done.
Enjoy.
Yeah. You're done. That is
that
even
really
easier.
Yeah, very easy.
Even easier there. So.
Yes.
And then that brings us to the dessert. As we mentioned, this is perfect for this weekend's or Monday's game. I guess it's not really this weekend, is it? Yeah. I don't know why they do that on Monday.
It could be because it's a long weekend for some people with it being Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
So it is a long weekend.
So, okay, we'll call it it's a long weekend for us. So we'll call it the weekend.
There
anyway, this is the perfect dessert for your Buckeye victory party on Monday evening. These are Buckeye bars. Okay.
So 1 cup of creamy peanut butter, 1 stick of butter softened, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 1/2 cups of powdered sugar. Do not pack that. So make sure you use like a spoon and put it into your cup. So it's because if you pack it, it's going to be too much.
Oh, okay.
2 cups of chocolate chips and 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, which is optional, but I use it. It just kind of helps spread it much easier.
Okay.
So line a square 9x9 inch baking dish with parchment paper. Add your peanut butter, your softened butter to a bowl and beat on medium at medium speed with an electric mixer, scraping down the sides. As it blends, add the vanilla extract, blend on low speed, and then add the powdered sugar. Definitely want to make sure you're on low speed then, or you'll have a
you'll have it everywhere.
Powdered sugar cloud.
Yeah.
Once all the powdered sugar is added, continue to mix on low until a firm a ball forms. So you're going to get almost like a dough.
Okay.
The dough should not be wet. So if it is, add a little bit more powdered sugar. Then transfer the peanut butter mixture to the lined pan. Press it down with your fingers in a separate microwave-safe bowl. Add the chocolate chips and your coconut oil and microwave for 30 seconds. Then stir and heat for 20 to 30 seconds more if needed. Just make sure all those lumps are gone.
Okay. And smooth.
Yes, nice and smooth. Pour the melted chocolate mixture over your peanut butter layer and use a spatula to spread the chocolate evenly over top. Make sure all your peanut butter is covered. Place the bars in the refrigerator for about 2 hours or so to allow the chocolate to harden, and then top with some sea salt if desired, and enjoy.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. That's really easy
yes,
stuff
really
there.
Easy, but really good. And, yeah. And it's easier than making Buckeye balls. I mean, those can
yeah,
be...
Yeah, the Buckeyes are... Yeah. Yeah, they're great.
They're
but
very good, but this is just a much easier
way. A lot easier, and yeah. It's the same stuff.
Yeah,
so,
not as complicated. Yeah.
So the recipes for the baked Mexican chili pasta, the Mexican cornbread muffins, and the Buckeye bars, of
Buckeye
course,
bars.
Are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, are they not?
Yep.
Okay, go to @Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook for those recipes. And if you can't remember that, just go to goodmornings.net, our website, and you'll find the link to those recipes there. And as always, if there's a recipe that you're looking for or if there's a recipe that you would like to share, we would love to hear from
Most
you.
Definitely.
You can message us on the Facebook page, again, @Kyra's Kitchen WFIN, or you can email us. goodmornings@WFIN.com is the email address, and that will work as well. So something you like to share,
yes.
Something that you are looking for, whatever it might happen to be. But there you go. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, once again, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that is goodmornings.net. You will also find links to follow us on social media. You can sign up for our daily email newsletter, link there to email us with anything you want to share and lots more. Again, goodmornings.net. A quick note, we are taking a few extra days off this weekend. There will be no podcast tomorrow or Monday or Tuesday. We'll be back with the next new show on Wednesday of next week. So until Wednesday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. Go Bucks! We'll catch you back here next week.